CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It's Friday. Yes, you made it to the end of the week once more. Congratulations. We've got a lot to do today. And I've got lots of surprises for you today. We've got Ben coming on the show, which I know a lot of people love when Ben comes on. He's on at 6:30 this morning. Ben has got a whole new routine he wants to talk to us about, too. He's been doing this really, I think, pretty interesting project, which he'll tell us about just now. And then Gord Laws joins us from 7 a.m. this morning. So you got Ben, we got Gord. And Gord is actually going overseas, so we're going to find out how all of that is going. And he may not be on the show for a while because he's going overseas, so this is your chance to catch up with him and ask him all the questions and find out what's going on with Gord Laws. Also, a little bit later, we're going to be joined by two dudes, the Saxby Twins, in just a few minutes, actually. These guys are in music, and they're really young. I mean, they're a neo dance and pop act, so we'll find out what their music's all about, but also, like, there's always this thing with twins that I think people are fascinated by, so we'll talk to them a little bit. I mean, they've been working with people like Daniel Barron and so on, so it could be quite cool to hear their story. George Meany joins us later on, and we've got a couple of emails and some news and all sorts of other stuff, so it's a busy Friday morning. I hope you're having an awesome day today, or that your day has at least started off pretty well. Let us know what's going on. I was in Cape Town yesterday, flew back last night. Not much to tell, really. There's a weird thing that happened, though. So on the way down on Wednesday, and by the way, Cape Townians must stop saying, I'm flying down to you when they come to Gauteng. That's up. I mean, it's up on the map, and it's up on altitude. So it's up to Joburg, and it's down to Cape Town. And it's up to Joburg, and it's down to Durban. Sorry, there's no way you could put it otherwise. So there was this woman who sat next to me on the way down on Wednesday to Cape Town, and then the same woman ended up sitting in this. We were in different seats because we were in row 9 on the way down and row 6 on the way up. She ended up sitting next to me again on the way back. And I said to her, this is very weird. I mean, what are the chances, right? I understand that they're what? How many people are on a plane? I don't even know. Is it 200? Is it 200 people? Maybe more than that, maybe less. But on the same plane? She's sitting next to me there and on the way back. What manner of probability delivers that sort of opportunity to anyone to end up in exactly the same situation? It felt like deja vu. It was weird. So that was pretty strange, and I just wonder if there's someone who does probability calculations, an actuary or something. Tell me what you think that comes from, and what the chances of that. So maybe she's the woman I was meant to marry, but I missed the opportunity. I didn't ask her for a number or anything. So what can you do? That's another one that's gone. Was she hot and rich, says Claire? That's all that matters. Oh, I love the way you think. Claire, you are. You know what? Claire, you and I get married. How about that? But only if you're hot and rich, obviously. But I like the way you think. She was quite attractive, yeah. She was wearing all black, which was exciting. She had long blonde hair. She was attractive. And one weird thing. It's always something weird, right? There's always a thing. It's like Seinfeld with the big hands. The thing with this woman, on both the trip down to Cape Town and the trip back, she went to the loo in between, but she took a really long time. Now, I don't know what that's about. Like, why would you want to spend any extended amount of time in the bogs of an airplane? I mean, if anybody knows, I'd love to know what you do in there. I mean, what are you going to do? If I think about the toilet on an airplane, it's so small. It is so cramped. It is so uncomfortable. You don't want to sit down. People pee all over the place. It smells bad. It's very weird. And I'm trying to think about, she was in there for a substantial amount of time. I'm talking like 15 minutes. And remember, after about 5 minutes, everybody else starts lining up at the loo, and there's usually only one or two on a plane. And she had taken up the one for Marco says she's doing powder. Fiasin says cocaine. See, you guys are thinking very creatively here. I didn't think about that. That could be it. Maybe she's a cokehead. Congo Chris says she was waiting for me to come and knock on the door for the Mile High Club. A missed opportunity. I don't know how that ever happens. I mean, unless you're doing an overnight flight, and it's overseas and you've got maybe a bigger plane and the cabin crew are not hanging around, because the cabin crew are right there at the door to the loo the whole time. So I don't know how anyone gets the Mile High Club thing going. That is something I've never figured out. Anyway, I mean, I do think these are the things that go through my head when I'm on a long plane. So a long plane flight. So I don't know what you're thinking, but this is me. I'm like, this woman sitting next to me again. She spends a long time in the toilet. I was confused. Let's get our day going. I dated a girl, says Vyas, and it took an extremely long time. She was a heroin addict. Jesus. Heroin addict. Are those just, you know, like if you kick under a bush, do heroin addicts fall out? I don't understand that. I thought heroin addiction was a very rare and unfortunate thing, and you know, something that happened to a tiny minority of people. But what can we do? Nico says maybe she dropped a log and wanted to wait till the air cleared. Well, this is the stuff I am thinking. I didn't think of drugs, but that is something I've been thinking about. That's hilarious. she was part of the new Mile High Club, in which they just masturbate. Well, it is May, which someone sent me a poster. It's apparently May is Masturbation Month. So everybody, good luck for the month of May. You know, for Masturbation Month, this is hugely important. Leanne is not joining us today. She's feeling a bit sick, which is not the end of the world. We will manage without her. And as I said, we've got Ben, we've got Gord, we've got lots of people joining us today. So we'll have some new guests coming on, people you haven't met yet before, the Saxby twins, in just a short while. Stick around for that. A couple of other things that I thought were worthy of discussion this morning. You know, my dog Carl died last month, and I was thinking about getting a new dog. And I had a dream last night about puppies, which is very unusual. This weird dream that I suddenly adopted like three or four puppies from like some shelter. And I just know in the dream it was a bad idea, and in reality it would be a bad idea. Because anything more than one dog is too much work. And I've seen this happen. You get these real do-gooders, and they adopt like three or four animals, and then they end up with major problems because the animals fight, or the animals tear up their house, or they can discipline one at a time. You know, it's a disaster. And the other thing is, I got thinking about a friend of mine who she lost a pet just a while ago. Now, far be it for me to tell other people how to feel about this. And obviously, I was pretty sad, and it took me a little while to get over Carl not being around anymore. And anyone who's ever lost a pet, you know what that's like. But this woman has been posting about losing this dog, and she's a friend of mine, so I don't want to mention names, or she's going to know that I'm talking about her on the show, and sometimes people do. She has been posting probably every day for the last 2 weeks about this dog who died. And she's built a little shrine at home. And it seems to me she's really struggling. But I think there's a line where you kind of, if you go over that line, it's a bit weird, you know. You know, suddenly you're almost in mourning for an extended period, like a month, before you can get over it. I don't know that that's completely healthy. I think it's good to grieve about anything in your life that you lose, especially a person or an animal that you really love. There has to be a moment of closure and of grief and all that stuff. But if you are spending a month mourning the death of this animal, I would venture to say that there's some proper trauma going on, and you maybe need to see someone about that. Doesn't sound entirely sensible to me. Just a couple of sort of top line thoughts that I've been sitting on planes thinking about over the last few weeks. Anyway, the weekend is here one more time, and it's a normal weekend, and next week is back to a normal five-day week. So if you're not in a hurry, I'm sorry, you've got to get back into it. There is no two ways about this. We're going straight back into a five-day week next week. It means everybody has to gird their loins. Sorry about that. What the hell that is. Gird their loins, pick up their game, and start going back to work and doing things normally. Also, I see governments have... They meant to have told us yesterday that we don't have to wear masks anymore. You know, it's all... It's kind of... I thought it was done. I thought we were finished with this pandemic now. I thought it was over. And I'm not going to talk about this for long because I know a lot of people are sick of it. But then I get this message from a friend of mine who's got kids at school. And she says to me, oh, the government, they've just sent this thing out. And I got to read just the opening line of this. It's from Department of Health. All right. So this is a Department of Health notification. Here's what it says. Health Department clarifies the wearing of face by children at school. It's a proper... You heard that right. They didn't say the word face masks. They said Health Department clarifies the wearing of face by children at school. These fucking morons. They can't even get that right. Anyway, they've been receiving a lot of feedback from people. They'd like to encourage South Africans to share their feedback, blah, blah, blah. But then they go, we'd like to bring to the attention of the public that there was an error in the media statement about mask wearing by children at school. Now, I never understood why we made children wear masks at school anyway. They are not especially susceptible to this. I don't think we've had a single case in South Africa, and I stand to be corrected, but if we have had a single case, it is maybe one of single-digit cases in this country of kids who've died of COVID. And therefore, for these children to still be wearing masks is not only completely counterintuitive, illogical, and stupid, but it's also just an exercise of control. I feel very sorry for this friend of mine who's a mum, and for all other mums and dads who are like frustrated beyond belief at the general incompetence of the administration in this country in trying to handle this thing, but also their reluctance to just do the right sensible thing. You know, unless we take them to court, which again, credit, whether you like them or not, to Nick Hudson, and to all the people at various organizations that have actually gone, medical doctors included, and forced this government to court and forced them their noses to the grindstone and made them realize the error of their ways by a court order. It's the only way you can get them to do anything. So if you're a parent and you're frustrated about this, I'm really sorry. Apparently, you still got to wear masks. Even kids still do. They are effective non-pharmaceutical invention. They say this in a release. How? Tell me how a cloth face mask, which is what most kids are wearing, how is that going to prevent anything from? We've already said and seen in countless and innumerable places and times that these are just cosmetic. Does nothing. And yet they persist with this nonsense. You know, it's like someone who discovers a way to not make a light bulb work, and then they keep using that way to keep making light bulbs that don't work. When people want light bulbs that work, it boggles the mind. Anyway, so apparently we still have to wear face masks, but I would encourage, as I said yesterday on the show, and I think Canton agreed with me on the Burning Platform, that it is time for civil disobedience. So if you're also sick of this stupidity, only put on a face mask if someone in authority asks you to, and you're feeling like you want to comply. Otherwise, just do not do it. You don't have to do it anymore. Don't listen to any of these morons. It's complete nonsense. It's about time security guards went back to actually doing security guard jobs. It's about time that people in planes started being air hostesses again, serving you drinks and stuff. It's time everybody stopped saying, "Where's your face mask?" and get on with their actual job. And if they don't have an actual job, it's time for them to go back into the unemployment queue. Sorry, that's how it's going to work. Right, let us turn our attention to a new musical act in South Africa. I'm always keen to meet people who are doing something new, and who are doing something new in a time, in an industry, where it's not very easy to do this stuff. We've got a pop act called the Saxby Twins, who are going to come on and join us in a second. They have been online, like everybody else, for 2 years, And they've been doing low-key releases. And they've got a new song, which we'll talk to them about in a moment. They were spotted online by the A&R team at Universal Music as a standout talent a little while ago in 2020. And, of course, they started off on TikTok, which is the place you get noticed now. It used to be that you would have to do that on YouTube and on Twitter and on Instagram. But now TikTok is the place where they discover new talent. So let us meet 21-year-old Kyle and Wade Saxby. They're here on the line. Hey guys, how are you doing?
Hey, Gareth. It's really awesome to be here. Looking so forward to this interview. Yeah, hey, Gareth. It's an honor to be here.
So which one's Kyle and which one's Wade?
So Kyle is in the white shirt and Wade is in, I think you can call it a navy shirt.
You really are twins, guys. This is fantastic. You know, I met two people the other day. They told me that they were twins and they were nothing alike. They're not fraternal twins. Yep. What do they call them?
We're very fortunate in that way, we're very similar looking.
Now, what happens if one of you gets fat? I mean, you can't, you know.
Well, a funny story. A few years ago, my face actually used to be quite a lot wider than my brother's, and he used to be quite slimmer. And that'd be the defining way that people would be able to tell the difference between the two of us.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I need to change this. Like, I can't keep living like this. And then,
so what did you do? Did you stop eating for a few days or something like that?
To be honest, I don't actually know what I did. I just naturally slimmed out and the rest is history.
So listen, guys, I mean, there's something cool, and I mean, a lot of people would say it's gimmicky, but I think it's awesome that you look similar, that you guys are twins. There is this weird bond that twins have, whether people like it or not. It is true, and I'm sure you have it as well. The fact that you're both musically talented just proves the point as well. And a lot of this is genetic, right? What are the major differences between you two? You mentioned the physical difference of your face looking different, then you kind of, you know, you now you look very similar. But what other differences are there between you two, especially when it comes to music?
So I would say that's actually, it's quite a tough question for us to answer. Because I mean, if we look at school and stuff, we're very similar in most aspects, whether it was with regards to sports. I think even our matric averages in general, it was like
really?
A percentage difference when it came to mark wise. So
really? Wow.
Yeah. One thing I think that a lot of people try and distinguish with us apart is with our laugh, I'd say. Mm. Otherwise, it's quite hard to tell. I'd say at the end of the day, our hair used to go different ways in school. And then a lot of people started noticing that and picking up on that trend. And we thought to each other, we turned to each other and we're like, you know what? Let's just change it up and make it hard for people.
Have you ever impersonated each other because one of you was in trouble and it was a way to get out of it?
We haven't done that before, but well, I mean, I guess we have a few times to try and confuse our friends and every now and then, I suppose, with a girl. we actually met each other in the bathroom one time at school. Randomly, we both just went to the toilet at the same time and we're like, hey, let's switch classes. And
oh, that's hilarious.
I think it was like in grade 9 where we had to take music and art, and my brother was in art and I was in music, and we switched. And the teachers had absolutely no idea except our close friends. So, yeah, we spent about a good 30 minutes in each other's classes, just sitting at the back and having a bit of fun messing around with the teachers.
I love it. I'd be if I had a twin, I'd be doing that all the time. Plus, I'd make my twin do all the work, and I'd just chill and be lazy.
Yeah, 100%. Kyle, I'm the older one, and Wade does everything for me.
All right, so listen, let's talk about your music for a second. You've just released this this new song, I Think I'm Falling For You, right? And
and
people can get it where, online? Is it available on all the different services, again, Apple Music and so on?
Yeah, so everyone can find the song on Apple Music, Spotify, all music streaming platforms. And then we like keeping them up to date and on our social medias also with regards to all of that. But yeah, all of our music is available on all music streaming platforms, even YouTube.
So, all right, I want to talk a little bit about how this all started. But the one comparison people are already coming up with in the comments is that you guys remind them a little bit of Luckinville. I mean, have you ever met those guys?
Yeah, we have. We always get compared to them all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, we really, really have been big fans of Luckinville growing up, and especially looking at what they've done as twins, is it obviously can be inspiration towards us and our music careers. But yeah, at the end of the day, we are very different to them, we feel.
Sure.
Especially what we produce in terms of music, and yeah.
And you've worked with Daniel Barron, right?
Yeah, 100%. We worked with them. We actually did quite a few songs with them prior to getting signed to Universal. And working with him was really an awesome experience, and gaining his experience that he's gained within the music industry. And we even made a track with him together called Ooh La La, which is
Nice.
really, really cool.
All right, so you live in Joburg, you've been working in Joburg, you've been producing music now for what, 2, 3 years, and you've had music in your blood from when you were little kids. So what's the big idea here, guys? Because it's really tough in the music industry right now. It's very, very difficult to get people to take notice. It's very hard to get people to actually buy music because a lot of people just pirate the stuff. You want to do performances, obviously, but that's also complicated coming out of COVID and everything. So what's the plan? Because it doesn't work the way that it used to. Even though you've been spotted by Universal, how much can a record company really do these days? People have to promote themselves. You have to use social media, and you have to use TikTok and YouTube and everything else to get things done. It's tough. What's your plan?
So yeah, 100%. I think you hit the nail on the head there. These days it's all about what we've recognized as perseverance within the music industry. You can't just release one song and then think that you've made it or you're going to be the next pop act or any act in general. It's all about
Absolutely.
perseverance, hard work, and it's just, yeah, that continued drive of determination each day.
And one of the things we've also noticed is that even though we've been signed to a record label, we cannot rely on them and be like, oh, they have all the
Oh yeah.
contacts and
No,
everything.
no, no.
It's still up to us at the end of the day to actually make a move and insert importance and from our side to do what we can do best and not just rely on them. But yeah, in terms of that, at the same time, we also are studying at Stellenbosch University. So
Okay.
we're hopefully finish our studies at the end of this year and then pursue this dream of ours, which is
What are
obviously
you
music. And
both studying? Are you studying the same thing, or are you studying something different each? What are you doing?
So yeah, we're studying literally, we got different. So we're doing honors this year, with the BCom Management Sciences with a focal area on entrepreneurship and innovation sciences. And we basically do the same subjects, just different thesis topics, which we're tackling at the moment, which is really cool.
Well, I mean, this is cool. And you said the magic words. You said hard work, because that's really what the music business is about now. The only people who will get ahead are not necessarily the people who have the better songs, not necessarily the people who have the better talent, or what, who put together a better act. It's the people who work the hardest. And that's, I think,
100%.
that's going to be really tough, because I do think it's especially difficult for breakthrough acts, people who are trying to get noticed, to make their way through the system. It's not set up for talent, frankly.
Yeah, so one of the things we've noticed these days, especially, is that with the modern technology and social media and so on, basically anyone can get in front of a microphone, produce some music, even use a little bit of autotune and put themselves out there. And at the end of the day, it really is up to public, and it's up to yourself also backing yourself that you believe that the music that you're going to put out to the public will be good enough for them to grasp and really enjoy. But yeah, it is tough, but at the same time, it is enjoyable,
We
the
are.
whole process. And
We love it. And there's nothing more we'd love to do than being on a stage in front of people and singing and seeing people relate to our lyrics.
well, I think you're in luck there, because people are really desperate to be entertained. They want to get out there again. They want to start seeing live music. So do you guys play any instruments, or are you doing like, do you get backtracks produced, or are you making the music live? Like, how does it work? What kind of stuff are we talking about here?
So yeah, I can. Fortunately, our mom's a piano teacher from home, so I can play a bit of piano with regards to instruments and all. But however, when it comes to beat production and all, we prefer to go and sit down with the producer. So
In a
currently, we're
studio.
working with Earvolt, who's one of the main acts within Monarch the band. So currently, we
Oh,
go
they're
to him
fantastic.
and then,
Monarch are awesome. That was great. That was a great
yeah,
band.
they're absolutely insane. They're absolutely incredible. So in terms of that, we go and sit down with him and we discuss ideas, we brainstorm with each other, feed an environment in which we can relate to, and literally from there we brainstorm and then come up with what we feel is the best product in which our fans and entertainments will, well, people within the entertainment industry would enjoy.
It sounds great, guys. I'm very excited to have you on the show. I think it's going to be a really interesting ride for you. I think you're going to have a lot of fun. I think you'll meet plenty of interesting people, and hopefully you can also along the way, you know, carve out a proper career here. Unfortunately, also for people who start off in music, you're going to have to probably do a whole bunch of other things. So I'm pleased you're studying at Stellenbosch as well. And good luck with your theses, both of you.
Thank you so much, Gareth. Yeah, really appreciate that.
Well, if you want to find the guys, they'll tell us now where we can get them on social media, because that's also a big part of how you make it work these days, right? I mean, you started on TikTok. How's that going?
Yeah, so we started on TikTok probably about 2 months ago, and since then received a crazy amount of growth for our song called Falling For You. And that's how we got spotted by Universal Music. And yeah, one day my brother received a DM from one of the head A&R guys, and he came running into my room and he was like, whoa, I just received a DM.
Wow.
And then since then, we're like back and forth process, chatting, and yeah, just coming to conclusions in terms of agreements and so on. And
yeah, initially, before we started TikTok, we actually started it 2 years ago during a year and a half when it was the major lockdown within South Africa.
Right.
And we started making a few videos. Obviously, our videos back then were trying to be more comedic in a way and stuff like that. And we started looking at it and thinking, no, this is actually really, really cringe. So we took a complete halt and completely stopped doing that. And then once again, 3 months ago, we decided to start again. And ever since then, we haven't looked back. It's helped us in terms of our music.
It takes a real musician to listen to their own stuff and go, ooh, that's a bit cringe. It's a hard thing to do. that's like a parent looking at their kid and going, I've got to give this one back. It's so true. Yeah, it's tough.
It's so true. No one realizes how many times like artists actually listen to their songs over and over and over before they actually put it out to the public.
Yeah, and listen, especially when you struggle to find a good producer and a good studio to help you put the thing together, that's tough work. And if you can find someone who's really good at that, you're like half the work is done. All right, gents, so good to see you. Thanks for being on the show this morning. All the best.
Thank you so much, Gareth.
Where can people find you? Because they're going to want to follow you on social media. Now we all want to know. Now we're part of your story, whether you like it or not. So we got to follow you guys and see what happens.
Awesome. Yeah. So everyone can find us on at Saxby Twins. We're very active on Instagram, TikTok, and we use Facebook occasionally. But yeah, Instagram is our main platform in which we're the most active on, especially TikTok also. And yeah, everyone can just go search us there, even on various streaming music platforms. And yeah, our socials will pop up.
Awesome. At Saxby Twins, find them on all the different social media and follow them as we see their career explode. Hopefully you guys end up being huge, monstrous successes all over the place. And we could say we spoke to you first.
Thank you so much, Gareth. And honestly, from our side, it's a real privilege to be on here. We know we've followed you since the Idols days, and it's honestly it's a real privilege. Yeah,
good to have you both on here. But please keep confusing people about who's who. Like really mess with them. I mean, it's like such a superpower. It's such a weapon that you can use that the rest of us can't deploy. You must mess with 100% people's heads. Keep on one of you must say that you're the other one. You got to occasionally get like a girlfriend and confuse the hell out of her. You've got to tell people that it's that one of you has gone overseas and then the other one does everything, but actually you're both doing it so that they think you're doing double the work. It's amazing. There's so much you can do here. All right. Keep us
we'll
guessing.
We'll keep those in mind.
All right, guys. Lovely to see you. Thanks very much.
Awesome.
There we go.
Thank you so much, guys.
That's the Saxby Twins. And apparently they've already had on, yeah, I think this is on YouTube, 97,760 views since February of this year. That's fantastic. So good for them. That's according to Parallel Parking. Cool guys. I mean, if you've only been on since February this year and you've almost got 100,000 views, that's pretty damn good. Well done, guys. That's nice. And as I said, I like to find out who's doing things in music at the moment. I haven't been paying as much attention as I used to, especially when I was on music radio. So it's nice to see this. As I mentioned earlier, we can have Ben join us in a moment or two. We've got Gord joining us at 7 o'clock. It's going to be a busy morning today. We've got loads of things to talk about and some funny comments coming in here. Some people talking about the government and and how stupid they are about the things that they've still got going since the pandemic broke out. And then Audrey's asking a good question about someone we interviewed not so long ago. Do you know that if that movie has been made by the students that we had on They're making a movie about their bride being stolen. I haven't actually caught up with them, but maybe it's a good idea to check in. We spoke to them this year still, so I think you've got to wait just a little bit longer before we find that out. More comments on the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial. That is going ahead and becoming more and more embarrassing. I was actually talking to someone about that yesterday. It's so bad. You know, if you thought Hollywood was shit before, you have to realize, like, Amber Heard and Johnny Depp have just taken things to a new level of shit, because these are not good people. You would not want to be around either of these people. You look at them and you say, well, they've got success. They're both good looking people. They've got lots of money. They're world famous on a huge scale, on a scale that most people would never be able to even comprehend in their wildest dreams. And yet they behave like trash. They behave like the trashiest people from the trashiest neighborhood in the whole of South Africa. I mean, you know, the shitting in the bed or everything else. Congo Chris says, I have a choice for you this morning. Would you rather be terrible at sex, be married to Amber Heard, or have to clean all the air fryers in your city once a month? Well, count me out of the air fryers. That one's not going to happen. Being married to Amber Heard is that's a death sentence. I mean, I think eventually you won't be able to have sex anyway, because you'll be so turned off by her psycho behavior. In the beginning, it'll be a turn on, don't get me wrong, but later on you'll go crazy too. And then the choice of being terrible at sex, maybe I am already terrible at sex. How do you know I'm not, Congo Chris? So maybe that's a moot point. Here he is. We haven't seen him for a long while, and Ben has been doing something really cool, which is why he's only joining us now at 6:30. Did you go on your walk this morning? The same thing that you're doing every day? Yeah.
Every day, Gareth. Every day.
Just explain this. I think this is quite cool. So Ben is doing this thing where he follows the same route every morning for a whole year, and he takes pictures at the same spot along this route, and then he's going to put them together into like a time lapse, where you get to watch how the seasons in a year in Johannesburg changed the neighborhood completely. I think it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, this makes me sound so old here. Yeah, but it's you know, with the whole fitness with the whole fitness and wellness thing, it's all about just trying to keep trying to find the next 1% of the improvement. So, you know, having a morning structure is so important, as you would know, being a professional in the broadcasting industry. So I wake up at 5. Yeah. And I take 5 photos. Yeah. So one on my roof, one on my face, which obviously changes. And at this age, it just changes rapidly. Jesus. All the time.
And first thing in the morning, then, I don't know if anyone is brave enough to take it.
It's not good.
Jesus. Your face first thing in the morning. I sometimes start this show and think, oh, they're going to think I was fucked by a train last night because I looked like this. And that's just how
it's
you look.
Rough, eh?
I know.
Yeah, guys.
Aging
is not for
sissies.
And I guess as a guy, you shouldn't be conscious of this, because it'll only make you upset. But like, your face ultimately loses elasticity. I think that's what it really boils down to. Mm-hmm. So look, another reason why I'm doing this is that it locks me into something for an entire year. So there's no flakiness. Because as it gets cold, like I'm looking right now as the sun is just rising. So it was warm in January, obviously, bright. So like, the photos of my face are like happy in sunshine. Uh-huh. And then now it's like kind of like pruney in the dark. But it's cool, because it just gives you like a purpose. So no matter what, like, even if you're hungover, which happens from time to time, I still do drink a bit. Red wine kills me, but I do like it. But every morning when I wake up, all I have to do is walk. So there's no excuses. Like, you can't be that feeble that you can't walk.
And do you do this? So first and foremost, do you do this every single day, or do you take one day a week off or anything?
Monday to Friday, and then the weekends I generally try to sleep in, so I wake up at like 6. But yeah, I mean, if you get into a position where you can wake up every single morning at the same time, and if you can go to bed at the same time, again, I know this is hugely boring for most people who just wouldn't want to do this, but that's exactly how you build up good sleep memory, essentially, good sleep habits. And that's how you get good sleep. And obviously, this age, that's how you raise your testosterone. Because if you're not getting good sleep, then you're going to get bad testosterone. And then Congo Chris, there's no choice, but you will be bad at sex. So you can't help that.
See, but we can't afford that. I mean, you can't have more years of bad sex.
No. Can't have even more bad sex on an already aging body, which gives you bad sex.
No,
you just can't have that. So yeah, I'm tackling a lot of things with this little morning project. It gives me structure. It gives me something to wake up to, be very productive around. And then this area that I live in is very, very pretty. So there's all kinds of trees. And obviously, the jacaranda trees, which are aliens from South America, yes, they bloom in the November time. So right now I'm looking at them and they look shit because it's winter, but they're going to get leafy and they're going to get purple. And the time lapse is going to show this whole metamorphosis of
There's nothing nicer. I have to force myself to think about this because I'm an optimist. But in spring, you forget how shitty winter was. But now going into autumn is the pits. So Ben, while we're on this, because it's seldom that, we're not interrupted by 17 other guests on the show when you do join us. But I really like the stuff that you're doing in terms of, and you've started a new Instagram account too, which is kind of about, the sort of fitness that people in their 40s might be able to take part in to improve themselves. I love stuff that improves yourself. I think a lot of people do. And it's not an age thing. I think people all over the world are just really into this whole self-improvement thing. We all want to be the best version of ourselves that's possible. Not only because then we'll be happier, we'll feel more fulfilled, we'll have a structure to our lives. And the biggest problem I would say in the world today, especially with people who are not having a good time, is that they lack that purpose and structure. So I love this stuff. It's really helpful. It's handy. Are you going to be putting out like daily, bits of info? Are you going to be putting out one thing a week, whether it's a piece of physical exercise you can do, whether it's the cold showers, whether it's you're waking up at the same time every day? These are things people would love to know. I'd love to know it.
Yeah. I think that the last 3 years have been so interesting for me so much has been changing in my life. I know this is going to sound hugely self-righteous, but I don't care about that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
But I just think that if you can find ways to be a better person, the world's going to be a better place. I know that sounds so convoluted at this stage of the day, but people out there are just so average and they seem to be okay with average because they don't know what the other thing is. But I realize the other thing's actually quite easy. You look at men's health models. Firstly, there's quite a lot of airbrushing going on there. There's a lot of preparation, dehydration. You don't look like that. People don't like that. Don't look like that all year round. Okay.
Yeah.
But you look at them and you go, oh, I wish I could be like that. And I can never be like that. I've got poor genetics. I've got a dad bod. I've got a gut, whatever. But all of those people would have the exact same. Yeah. All those people would have the exact same thing if they had your shit mindset. So I really have been exploring this whole mindset thing. I made the conscious choice that I don't want to be like my friends and be married with kids. And, it's just, so what do you do with your time?
Yeah.
I can either be a drunk or, like I said in the show quite a few times, I just found that the alternative is actually not that hard. People just keep making excuses because excuses and victimhood is like a currency. So they keep going on that. Yeah. So what I really, really want to do, and this is another thing that I've become quite disillusioned with, my industry, as in I work in marketing, right? There's certain parts I love it. There's certain parts where I feel like I didn't need to exist today.
Yeah, you're very realistic about this. I wouldn't say you're optimistic or pessimistic. You're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. So I would really like to get to a stage in life where, if I can help 10 people and do these kind of things, and it gives me more purpose and makes me feel happier. And ultimately, whenever I've been in social circles, I've always done a lot of listening of late, mostly because people just whine and bitch and I just can't participate in that anymore. Boring. So I just listen. And there's a very common thread that people do want to be better, but they don't know how to be better. So what I want to do, and I've started this average athlete account, is that I want to show people that it's actually not the hardest thing in the world. Sure, you're never going to look like the men's health model if you just suddenly drop eating macaroni and cheese. There are so many different things you need to do in order to get to there. But it's also it's what we should be doing. It's what we used to do. Humans used to be quite slim. There's this great meme that's been around for a while now. There's people on a beach in the 70s and people on a beach now. And it's a different planet. There's people have doubled and tripled some stages. And if you're a fat and unhappy guy, Gord can testify to this because, Gord basically lost. He lost two people.
He lost two people. Yeah. We'll talk to him.
Yeah, basically. And you'll ask him without prying too much into his conscience around this, but he wasn't happy. So therefore he wasn't probably the best friend or brother or son or whatever these things are. The moment now you ask him how he's feeling now, he'll be like, yeah, I'm so happy. I'm doing so well at stuff and everything about his life will be better.
Right. So two quick things.
It's not hard.
Simpiwe, who's in the studio in Joburg, really wants to see your cup. So just show them your coffee cup there. People are interested in that for some reason. Oh, it's Tigger from Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, I'm an absolute child and cat person. So yeah, I've had the Tigger Cup because it's really big and I drink lots of boiling water in the morning.
You just have hot water?
Yeah, so it's a hydration thing. So I don't, you know, when you obviously slept for the 8 hours, you don't have any liquid. So I do water before you do coffee because coffee is a stimulant, right? Water, you need to replenish and hydrate and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, Gareth, so this stuff's natural and it's happy and it's fun and it's not as hard as people think. And that's like the one thing I'd always want to try and share with people. And then ultimately, you know, you start getting better at like dropping things. Like I think this week I had my last burger.
Okay.
It's not about becoming a Nazi about these kind of things, but it's just there are little better things. And, you know, you default into these really bad habits because everyone else is doing it. But what if everyone else is doing good things? Then you would just be,
Well, another thing someone asked in the questions earlier is how was the Sun City trip that you and I took where we went up and down on the rides the whole time? And I explained already that it was a fantastic weekend. We behaved like 15-year-olds. We were literally competing with the 15-year-olds going up and down on the rides. And you've got to find like little mini adventures, right? People always spend their whole life thinking, well, one day I'll climb Kilimanjaro, but actually in the interim, you can do interesting things. You can do fun stuff that makes you enjoy life, that makes you feel alive, that puts
Absolutely.
You in a situation where you get a bit of an adrenaline rush, where you feel like you are doing exercise, you're having fun. And you're laughing a lot. That's part of the enjoyment day to day that people miss out on.
Exactly. Laughing's very good for core.
Damn right. All right.
Yeah, really, really good.
So some people here are asking questions. Here's Tahleho who says, how old is Ben? I'm motivated to get my best possible body yet. Well, you don't look like you're very old, just judging by the profile picture there. But you're talking mostly of people now in their 40s, right? When you speak about the average athlete, but anyone can start this anytime.
Yeah, everyone. You know, it's about fundamentals. Like I'm only sharing this kind of stage of the journey because I'm 40, so I can't relate to someone who's 28 mentally and physically. We're very different people. So the things that I'm talking about now is that I feel like when you get to 35, you're either divorced, you've got kids, so you've given up on yourself in some way between those two factors. You've already done terrible training, so you've got yourself into bad habits and obviously fallen off the rails. And you're also at a stage where you probably got disposable income where you can invest in yourself. So that's why I think this whole, what I'm talking about, is a good stage in life to get it going. But if you've got the gift, of youth, Tahilo, if you've got the gift of youth, you've got to use it. Because it's all about time in the game, you know?
Also, you can do this in your 60s. I mean, here's parallel parking. I'm turning 60 this year, and I'm ripped, best body ever. I mean, that's terrific.
That's fantastic.
You know, the body is just like the thing that the external world sees. That's one way we can judge whether someone's lazy or not. And we do judge. And people don't like this. I mean, the body positivity movement, it gets very cross. I heard this amazing story yesterday about this blogger. She's a fat female travel blogger. And she does this blog on how hard it is to travel as a fat person. And she weighs something like 180 kilograms. She's a British woman.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she travels around. And now she wrote this blog about how airplanes need to be redesigned because it's not comfortable for fat people. She says, oh, I can hardly get down the aisle. It's really, really difficult for me. And then when I get to my seat, I can see that everybody else is really worried that they're going to end up sitting next to me and the seat's too small and I couldn't even put down the tray table because I'm so big that the tray table won't fold down in front of me so I can't do any work, blah, blah, blah.
Is this a spoof account or is she being serious?
She's being dead serious. Now, the amazing thing
Can you imagine how self-indulgent you are? You think that Boeing or Airbus has to recreate a piece of machinery when you can just maybe lose your weight.
Right. No. She doesn't want to lose weight. She's very comfortable with her size. She thinks it's great. She's going to be dead in probably about 10 years, but she is enjoying her life in the meantime.
She just described 8 things about her life that's not great, though.
Well, this is it, right? So it's not really body positivity because if they were happy about it, they wouldn't have to say they're happy about it.
Yeah, of course not.
Anyway, I thought about this, and it excited me in some way. I'm like, well, if the fat lobby, because you know everybody these days, just especially in corporations, they all kowtow to this stuff. They're so terrified of being cancelled that they fall for this stuff immediately. So if her blog ends up on the desk of the chairman or the CEO of Boeing or Airbus, and they do change the configuration of planes, we could all benefit. More legroom.
No.
I think they'll make...
No, but Gareth, sadly, it would just mean more expensive tickets. You know, we don't live in a fantasy world. There's another thing about fat people is that they live in a fantasy world with this stuff. Because if there's more space, there's less passengers, which means there's more tickets. I mean, again, economics. There's no economics in her calorie counting on a daily basis. So she doesn't have it in the real world either.
No, well, just for a minute there. Just for a minute there, I was fantasizing about this idea that, okay, so the fat lobby will push so hard that the airlines will be embarrassed about how they've been squeezing us in like sardines. And maybe air travel will become more comfortable again.
Sorry. It'd be more expensive then.
So we were going to get to headlines. We'll get to those later on. I want to ask you about something else. Ben gave me this book, which I've started reading now. It's the story of Denys Raitz, a real South African hero. An amazing, amazing man. I mean, I didn't know anything about him until you told me about the guy.
Well, that's what I was so surprised, seeing is whenever I think of like local history, I know you know everything about it. So I read this book so I could be more smart with you when we talk. And you don't know about the guy. I was very surprised by that. How far in the book are you?
So I knew he existed, but I understood that he was around during the Anglo-Boer War and post that he had this really amazing life full of incredible adventures. I mean, this is one guy's life, but if you read it, it should actually be four people because he seems to have done so many amazing things.
Well, he stayed alive during 2.5 wars, essentially, so he should have been four people.
Yeah. And he not only survived, he kind of thrived. And everything he took on was just like a big adventure for him. What an amazing, amazing guy. But I didn't know a lot about him. So I've just started, as in, like I started the first chapter last night. So I'm making very slow progress, but I'll get going. And it's just awesome. I mean, I love the fact that there are these stories available to people. And, you know, we're all looking for new books, but there are old books that were written. And that was a different time. And the way that he talks about, you know, the early 1900s in South Africa, it's fascinating to hear what was going on in this country then. It was a totally different universe.
Yeah. You know, there's this great saying that I heard recently is that if people want something to fall, they should probably figure out White Rose in the first place.
Yeah.
And there's so much in this country that people just don't care about in the past. I know the past is obviously saddened by certain events and certain ways people treated other people, but then again, like, that's civilization, right? That's not South Africa.
That's the whole
civilization. People have tried to oppress people because people want power, people want control. So you can take that, run it back to Jesus times if you're into that, all the way through. So it's not like there was one only bad thing in this world. And what this book tells us is, like, why do certain people feel passionate about this country? Why do certain people hold such things so dear to them? And also, like, you know, what the British did, how the Afrikaans people came to be, local tribes, certain areas. And there's places that you just take for granted, you know, like you could be driving down to the Cape or you could be on some road that you might not have been on before. And suddenly you see this strange square structure, you know, and you think like, well, what is that? Those little blockhouses and what happened around those for a certain time in this country. It's very interesting. And it's good to know these kind of things. But there's just something so incredible about this guy's spirit. And as you say, adventure. I mean, I'm sure that after reading this book, you'll do a blind history episode on this guy and all the things around him.
So
but like the one thing to take out this morning, today's chat, is like that guy, he lived a time of absolute adventure, like absolute, absolute adventure. Like for a long stage in his life, he ate by killing something. it's a strange thing to hear now because I mean, this is a civilized man, right? This isn't like someone who lost the plot and started eating like mushrooms every single day and he lived off the land. He lived at a time where he had to go and like scout out certain areas. And, you know, he eventually ended up in quite heavily in politics. You know, he was very close to General Smuts, and at one stage he was even deputy prime minister. But one of his key things was to go out and, like, he was in charge of irrigation and forestry and these kind of things. But when he went on government visits, he would go walk with local people and they'd, like, take down, like, a wildebeest if they wanted to eat that night, you know? And he's on official government duty. And it's just all these little parallels you try to draw between now and then are so interesting. But, I mean, like, there's certain dams that we look at now. They went around. Like, this guy went around and said, okay, cool, catchment area, river, settlement, whatever, and then they put the works together to get that. Like, he played such an incredible role in making sure the Kruger National Park was the Kruger National Park, because he wanted a place that was conservation.
It's long-term thinking, and I think we're so
long-term thinking.
We're so disillusioned with the way that, you know, people, especially in government right now, are just in it for like how much money they can take out of the till themselves right now. There's no one thinking about building dams, or someone who's thinking about where the next highway might go, or, you know, zoning towns, for example. I know there are supposedly city planners in all of our major cities, but it doesn't look like they're planning anything if you look at the way our cities are developing. It's just like this random thing. You know, we don't have any beautiful avenues down the middle of our cities like Paris does. We don't have any parks in most of our towns. And if we do, that they're full of drunk people who've passed out and lots of litter. It's just... guys like this were thinking about the greater good back in the 1900s, trying to find a way to provide enough fresh water to build systems, to make buildings beautiful. I mean, I don't know when last in South Africa we built a truly beautiful old building. There are a couple of modern buildings that have gone up that are pretty, but most of the buildings that we have since the 60s are disgusting. They're horrible looking, ugly, concrete, glass monstrosities. And I look at some of the older buildings that must have been put up around the time that Denace Rates was alive, and when he was probably a young man. I think those buildings are just so much better looking. They seem like they were built for people who were a little more civilized than these ugly apartment blocks and flats that we see that were built in the 70s. Jesus, the 70s were horrible.
They really were. And back in those days, those things added to the culture. So if you've got things that complement the kind of people that you want to be or someone that you want to represent, then it just makes for a stronger civilization. And also these things that just play out in this book are so good. Like the book, basically, the one that you showed there, that's all three of his books. So he wrote this amazing trilogy. Mm-hmm. The first one he wrote while he actually self-exiled in Madagascar. After the Second Boer War, when eventually they came to a truce with the British, he was like, okay, cool, I'll lay down my guns, because somehow he stayed alive. I mean, this dude, he trekked with a few other really sort of determined Afrikaans guys. He ended up in like the Cape. Like the Boer War was basically up here, because Transvaal and the Free State were separate countries. And that was where the big... But this oak, he just suddenly made it down to the Cape. And, I don't know. But then at the end, they said, okay, well, you know, you have to now declare allegiance to the crown, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, fuck that. And then he ended up going to Madagascar for a few years. He wrote this book, and he wrote a second book, and he wrote a third book. So essentially it's from 1900 to 1948.
You know, when
it's a time where you can learn a lot about today by referencing that part.
I hear people now, you know, especially in America, they say, oh, well, if abortion is outlawed, I'm just going to move to Canada. But none of them ever do. You know, these celebrities, for example, who say, oh, I can't handle this government. They're all tyrannical. Here in South Africa, we're like, oh, government's so tyrannical. No one's going to get up and move to Madagascar. Then we're not principled enough. We say we are, but we're actually not. We're just a bunch of moaning, whining, complaining pieces of shit, really. We've got to get our act together. You got to sacrifice something if you want it to stand.
Yeah, exactly. And this guy wasn't bigoted at all, and he was very open-minded. So even though he did that, he ended up fighting for the British in the First World War, because his theory was that it's better to be under Commonwealth sort of rule than for the Germans and the German ideology to take over from the world. So even though he was so principled against the British taking over South Africa, he realized in a bigger picture that the world was under attack by this sort of, the Germans were always quite shitty, I think, pre-1960. They weren't agreeable people. Maybe they're still not agreeable. They're just more sort of sedate about it.
That's about right, yeah.
And his whole thing, like, this is a guy who went and basically got malaria for 5 years and pushed oxen around, because he'd rather do that than be part of Britain. And then he just sort of like, okay, bigger picture, life's changing, got to do something different now. And it's like, people don't change their minds nowadays. They double down on stupid. They double down on certain things they thought were right without actually looking how the tea leaves are starting to fall.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Have you got plans for the weekend? Anything fun coming up?
No, not really. I'm playing golf again. I haven't played golf in quite a while.
What did you did you fall out of love with golf or the kinds of people who play golf?
It's a bit of a bit of a combination of all of that, I guess. No, I don't think I fell out of love with it. I just sort of fell in love with other things. It's actually quite a strange thing. I was in Cape Town this week for some work stuff, and as much as, you know, we always pull the piss out of Capetonians and like the place in general, it's like I've never had a stronger feeling to perhaps move back. And something that always like rooted me in Joburg was golf. It's the best golf city in the world. I always said this. And it always rooted me here. And now take away golf and suddenly I start looking at it and going, okay, so I could probably do this, this, and this. I can do that here. Yeah, interesting. So my mind's now shifted all because of like no real golf. So yeah, I'll play tomorrow. But you know, I don't enjoy beer, and golf is about golf and drafts.
I think a lot of people just a lot of hobbies that people take on are just excuses to drink.
Yeah, and I've always tried to like play the other side, saying it's not. But then I look at people and how they play golf and how they go about golf, and also just time of life. You know, like people who were my solid golf friends, they've either moved to Cape Town or they've had children. So the whole like, you know, there's just less people to play golf with. And, you know, I really cherish my free time, and I'm not spending it with someone who I don't agree with. Or not agree with, but I'd rather not spend time with. And 5 hours in golf, that's a long time to be around someone who's a knob.
It's picking up on the architecture discussion. Parallel Parking says, architecture used to include the art of beauty. Now it barely includes necessity for functionality. Building on a budget often negates aesthetics. Oh yeah, nobody cares about making anything beautiful anymore. It's all about like, we need 3 bathrooms and we need 1 kitchen and we need a staff area here. And it's all just ugly. It's ugly, ugly, ugly. Jared Cubis also says, you think South Africa built ugly buildings in the 70s. If you've seen the Barbican in London, it is a brutalist megastructure that is concrete and brick. Also, you know, that kind of architecture harkens back to a type of government. I mean, the fascists in Germany also built those ugly things out of concrete. And part of the reason I'm so angry about the 70s and how it's ruined so many cities in South Africa with hideous colors, mosaics, the most dreadful mosaics, concrete, glass. You know, the apartment buildings all over Pretoria, for example, that are so ugly that just living in them must depress the people who live there. If you live in a really ugly building that was built by some architect who's trying to cut corners or had no idea of how to make something beautiful, I think it affects your state of mind. I think you're condemning yourself to thinking a certain way because you live in a certain environment. And architecture is massively important. I remember we spoke to someone on the show not so long ago who's developing new buildings in Cape Town, I think. And part of the whole thing is that he wants to make buildings beautiful. He doesn't want to make them ugly. These days, it's all about function and how you can cut corners with costs. And that makes for some very boring buildings.
But it's a bit of a flawed argument, because if they say it's all about function, they're functioning in a shit way. Mm-hmm. And then that translates to the people. No, it's very interesting what you said there about sort of governments. You know, if you drive out of Johannesburg, there's that Charlotte Macleke
Hospital,
which is dreadful. I mean, it looks like someone just gave a child blocks and they like drew windows onto it.
Yeah.
And the reason why that building is there, actually, as it is in its spot right there, is that all the major landlords back in the day, obviously the national government, those nationalist people, didn't like, because, you know, they were rich, they were British, they were very against them. They basically built that there as a sign of like, this is us, we're in charge.
Right,
so
because
look at that and go,
that ridge, you know,
I wonder what they're thinking.
Yeah, all those beautiful old houses that the landlords used to have.
So many of those national monuments were just ripped apart because they put that Bleasbrock abortion of a structure there, and it was purely as a show of strength. It was like, we're in charge.
Fuck
this
you.
Is our place.
Yeah.
Fuck you. And they put it on the most beautiful part of Joburg, and they made an eyesore forever and ever.
It's
hideous. And that's government for you.
It is so hideous. So listen, we've got lots of other stuff to talk about. I want you to hang around if you can. Gord is going to join us for the first time in a long time, in just a short while.
Cool.
And plenty more. Ben is with us this morning. Ben Karpinski, you can get hold of us on the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Hopefully you're having an awesome Friday morning and you've got a good weekend planned. Stick around. Plenty more to come. CliffCentral.com.